The more temperamental cattle are at the upper end of the scale. So we then had two blood parameters that we looked at, the first one being cortisol. And cortisol is a glucocorticoid. It's secreted after the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis is activated. This is what we use as our indicator of stress. You'll see elevated levels of cortisol concentrations as a response to restraint, handling, processing, transportation, any kind of a novel environment that might stress that animal out. And when we see increases in cortisol concentrations, we typically see a decrease in the ability of the cell-mediated immune response. Our second blood parameter was interleukin-8, or IL-8. This is a cytokine, more specifically, it's a neutrophil chemoattractant, and it puts an X on the spot that the immune system needs to come take care of. It labels the problem for it. And then most of you are fairly familiar with bovine respiratory disease, or BRD, but we commonly see this develop as a response to an interaction between two or more of these variables. Typically, we see increases in stress, especially when animals arrive to the feedlot, and then these viral agents and bacterial agents are able to proliferate, migrate to the lower respiratory tract, and that's when we start seeing signs of BRD or pneumonia. So now getting more specifically into our study, the animals used for this were crossbred steers from a single ranch source in western Nebraska. There were a total of 2,870 animals used for this study. In year one, or 2007, that was 1,551 animals. In year two, or 2008, that was 1,319 animals. These animals were shipped from their single ranch source in western Nebraska to a commercial feedlot in southeast Colorado. And all animals were processed within 2 days of arrival to that feedlot. There were three different processing dates that we recorded data from. The first one was the time within those first 2 days of arrival to the feedlot. In year one, animals were given an RFID tag, weights were collected, blood samples were taken to determine those cortisol and IL-8 concentrations. Ear notches were taken to determine if any of the animals were persistently infected with BVD. Those that were removed from the study. Ultrasound measures were recorded at this time, and all animals were administered an oral and foron parasiticide, as well as a growth promotant. Year one cattle were purposely not vaccinated so that they would all be equally challenged for BRD in the feedlot. That led to a BRD rate of 45% that first year. To eliminate quite so many expenses associated with BRD, vaccination was included in year two, both Pyramid 2 plus type 2 BVD, as well as pre-sponsored sub-Q, and that led to BRD rates of 8% in year two, so a significant difference there. Animals were processed again at the time of reimplantation, approximately 74 days later, and at this time, weights and ultrasound measures were recorded on all the animals. Those same two measures were recorded at third processing, which was day approximately 140. Those temperament measures that I mentioned earlier, both exit velocity and shoot score, those were evaluated on each animal at the time of placement and again at the time of reimplantation. Both of these were treated as continuous variables in the statistical analysis. Harvest happened at approximately day 225. At this time, hot carcass weights were recorded, yield grades, quality grades, marbling scores, ribeye areas, and lung scores. That lung score was based on a scale of 0 to 3. There were two trained evaluators there looking at the aggregate lung. Those with the lower lung scores had the healthier lungs, and those with the higher lung scores are the ones that had more damage there. Feedlot personnel rode the pins daily to look for signs of BRD. Those signs included lethargy, nasal and optical discharge, depression, cough, and temperatures greater than 103.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Animals that did show two or more signs of BRD were taken across the alleyway to the Southeast Colorado Research Center, where they were treated according to commercial feedlot protocol for BRD. Those animals remained at the center for 5 to 7 days post-treatment, At that time, animals that showed to have positively reacted to the treatment were taken back to their respective pens. However, those that still showed two or more signs of BRV were treated a second time and kept for another 5 to 7 days. The assays we use to look at interleukin 8 and cortisol concentrations are shown here. For cortisol, it was a total count radioimmunoassay, and for IL-8, it was a human ELISA kit, and this was an ELISA kit that had previously been shown to interact with bovine IL-8 concentrations by Schuster and others in both 1996 and 1997 studies. Now, this led to three different data sets that we used. The first one was year one, so that's the unvaccinated cattle. Year two was the vaccinated cattle, and then a combined data set that included both years in that. For the sake of time today, I'm only going to go through the combined data set. And for statistical analysis on the phenotypic study, we used the general linear model procedure, multivariate analysis of variance for partial correlation coefficients, and then the logistic regression procedure. Fixed effects included in the phenotypic analysis were pre-feedlot BRD treatment, so whether that animal had to be treated for BRD or not prior to entering the feedlot, and then contemporary group. And that contemporary group captured effects of initial range unit, each of the processing dates at the feedlot, the date of arrival to the feedlot, and feedlot pin. And then for the general linear model procedure, we also used whether or not that animal was treated in the feedlot for BRD to get these scores means. So now getting into some of the results from the phenotypic study. This table has the LS means. On the left side, it's for those animals treated and not treated for BRD prior to entering the feedlot, and the significance of if they're significantly different or not. On the right side, it's whether they were treated or not within the feedlot for BRD. And these are the variables that were collected at the time of feedlot placement. As you can see across the board, ILA is not significantly different for animals treated versus not treated during either time period. Cortisol concentrations, however, are. We see that animals that were previously treated for BRD had significantly lower concentrations of cortisol at the time of placement than their peers that had not yet been treated. This might be an acclimation effect. These animals have been through the working chute one more time. It's not as novel of an environment to them, and because of that, they're not showing quite the stress response. On the other hand, cattle that would later be treated for BRD in the feedlot, keep in mind that hasn't happened yet, those showed to have significantly higher cortisol concentrations at the time of placement. Schick score was very similar to cortisol concentrations in that animals that were previously treated prior to entering the feedlot had significantly lower Schick scores at the time of placement. Again, that's probably just an acclimation effect. Those animals aren't so stressed by the by being worked through a working chute. But animals that were later treated in the feedlot for BRD showed to have significantly higher chute scores than their peers that would not be treated later on. There were no significant differences between exit velocity or weights in either time period. Now we're to the time of reimplantation. So this is approximately day 74. Within the first 35 days of arrival to the feedlot, in year one, 75% of the cattle that would be treated were treated. And in year two, 60% of the cattle that were going to be treated for BRD were treated within those first 35 days. So by the time of reimplantation, all of those treatments have happened, and it was a while back that it did happen. Now, for the pre-feedlot BRD treatment, we're not seeing any differences at this point for animals that were treated versus those that weren't treated prior to entering the feedlot, suggesting that those animals have bounced back. They're weighing just as much by the time of reimplantation, and they've gained just as much over that first period between the first processing and second period as their peers did that didn't have to get treated before entering the feedlot. We are still seeing significant differences, though, in those treated within the feedlot. Cattle that were treated in the feedlot for BRD, again, that happened quite a while back, those showed to have significantly lower chute scores than their peers that didn't have to be treated in the feedlot. Again, we would attribute that to acclimation, but that's going to contradict what something I say here in a minute, so keep that in mind. We also saw significantly lower weights for animals that were treated in the feedlot and lower gains. So that gain is, again, between the time of feedlot placement and reimplantation. Now, by the third processing, this is approximately day 140, animals that were treated a long time ago. We're seeing no significant differences between animals that were treated or not treated prior to entering the feedlot. Again, suggesting that might have inhibited them earlier in their performance, but at this point, we're seeing no significant differences. They're doing just as well as their peers that didn't get sick before the feedlot. Those that got sick within the feedlot, however, and had to be treated for that, are still showing a significantly lower weight and weren't able to gain as much during their time at the feedlot. They did gain comparable amounts during that second gain period between the time of reimplantation and the third processing, but weren't able to catch up in terms of total gain. Now here we have off-ratio estimates to determine if animals going from 0 to 1, so not treated to treated, prior to entering the feedlot, if that's significantly affecting the odds of having to be treated for BRD in the feedlot or significantly affecting the odds of mortality in the feedlot. We're not seeing any significance there, suggesting that there's no influence of pre-feedlot BRD treatment. Animals that were treated within the feedlot, however, that is significantly affecting the odds of mortality in the feedlot. We're seeing an increase in those odds by 350% in the odds of mortality. Now this table is a little flip-flopped from the last one. We're looking to see if a one unit change in any of these variables, so our exit velocities or shoot score at the time of either placement or reimplantation, or our blood parameters, if a one unit increase in any of those variables is significantly influencing the odds of the animal contracting BRD within the feedlot. The first significance we see is with exit velocity at the time of reimplantation. Animals that with a one unit increase in exit velocity at this time, that leads to a 17% increase in the odds of the animal having to be treated in the feedlot. We saw similar effects from shoot score. Shoot score, a one unit increase in shoot score at the time of reimplantation led to an increase in the odds of BRD treatment by 70% in the feedlot. But this is the one that contradicts what I said earlier. So we wanted to look at why our LS means are saying one thing and our odds ratios are suggesting another. And we found out that it was quadratic in nature. When we fit shoot score at the time of reimplantation as a quadratic effect on its influence to BRD treatment in the feedlot, it showed to be significant. So animals that at the lower end of the scale of shoot score at the time of reimplantation, those are experiencing more sickness in the feedlot, as well as those in the upper end. The ones in the middle are the ones that are showing the least amount of treatment for BRD in the feedlot. Now here we're looking at the same variables, both temperament measures and blood parameters, to see if a one unit change in any of those variables is significantly influencing the odds of a change in quality grade post-harvest. And we're seeing that none of these, as shown by the p-values, are significantly influencing the odds of quality grade. We saw very similar results with mortality. None of our temperament variables nor our blood parameters are significantly influencing the odds of mortality within the feedlot. And here we have the partial correlation coefficients between the different measures of temperament at both of our time points, so at the time of placement and the time of reimplantation. The greatest correlation that we saw was between exit velocity 2 and exit velocity 1, with a correlation coefficient of 0.44. The next strongest was between shoot score 1 and shoot score 2 of 0.24. There's quite a bit of difference there, and that might be due to the subjective nature of shoot score, in that has a little bit of bias and human error involved, whereas exit velocity is a metric that is a little bit more repeatable, and we'll see that later on. And there's a lot of numbers on this slide, but I'm going to take it a chunk at a time. These are the partial correlation coefficients between the temperament measures, the blood, and the blood parameters, performance traits, and carcass traits. What I want you to notice before I do too much on this slide, there's not a lot of things significant. Those that are significant are not strong correlations, and we see more significance on the right side of the screen, suggesting that exit velocity is a little bit more consistent in its measurements. So across the board, with the exception of exit velocity at the time of placement, we see that cortisol has a positive correlation with all of our temperament measures. Keep in mind, again, that's a small correlation, so not all that important. IL-8 is not significantly correlated with any of our temperament measures. Now getting into some of the performance traits, including the weights and gains in the feedlot. Again, not a lot of significance here. Where we do see significance, it's a negative correlation, suggesting that the more temperamental animals are not performing as well, which is what these correlations are showing. And then lastly are carcass traits. And again, not very many of these correlations are significant. Those that are negative. So with increases in exit velocity at the time of reimplantation, we're seeing decreases in heart carcass weights and yield grades, and a similar association between the shoot score at the time of placement and marbling score. More temperamental cattle at that time are showing lower marbling scores. However, those are small correlations. And here we have a contingency scale showing the number of head that went from a certain shoot score at the time of placement to a certain shoot score at the time of reimplantation. Those in the yellow boxes are the ones that, from the first processing to the second processing, they didn't change in terms of their shoot score. Those below the yellow boxes are the ones that got calmer between the first and second processing, and those above the yellow boxes are the ones that got more temperamental between the first and second processing. Most of these animals are shown right here in the middle. We're not seeing many along the edges, showing that not many went from one extreme to the other. Those that did change aren't changing a whole lot. Conclusions from the phenotypic study show that cattle that were treated for BRD in the feedlot, those are the ones that entered with the greater stress levels, as shown by the cortisol concentrations, and with greater temperaments. Those that were treated for BRD in the feedlot also had reduced gains and weights and had an increased odds of mortality in the feedlot. And the easily excitable cattle had lower hog carcass weights, lower yield grades, lower marbling scores, and lower ribeye areas than their peers that were more temperamental. Now the second thing we did with this data was look at the genetics of it. We first wanted to look at the heritabilities of our different variables. So we did that with our two blood parameters, with our two temperament measures. We also looked at the change in shoot score between the first and second processing, and the same for exit velocity, to look at the ability of the animal to acclimate. We then looked at heritabilities of both lung lesions and BRD incidents, so whether they had to be treated or not for BRD, and then the heritabilities of all of the carcass traits. We also had genetic correlations estimated between all of these variables, and then looked at repeatabilities of our two temperament measures. The animals, the data used for this were the combined data set, the same one we used in the phenotypic analysis. The statistical analysis for the genetic portion was performed in AS-REML. And there we used a two-trait animal mixed model with the random effect of additive genetics. And then we were looking at the repeatabilities. We also included permanent environment. And in fixed effects, again, were contemporary group and pre-weaning BRD treatment. There were the same 2,870 animals looked at in this study. The pedigree file had 7,177 animals with up to 7 generations of pedigree within that. When we looked at any of the statistics with BRD treatment, so whether they were treated or not within the feedlot, we first converted it to an underlying continuous scale using the probit function in AS-REML. So that's true for both the heritability of BRD as well as any of the genetic correlations with BRD. statistical model was the basic animal breeding model. This is a bivariate version of that, where Y is the vector of phenotypic observations, X is the incidence matrix of fixed effects, B was the vector of fixed effect solutions, C was the incidence matrix of random effects, U is the vector of random effect solutions, and E was the vector of residual effects. So most of you are probably pretty familiar with heritability, but for those that aren't, heritability is a measure of the strength of the relationship between breeding values and phenotypic values for a trait in the population. Our output from Anne Trimble gave us variance components, and with that, we're able to estimate this heritability. To do that, we took the additive genetic variance divided by the phenotypic variance. A heritability below 0.2 is considered lowly heritable. That's commonly our reproductive traits. A heritability between 0.2 and 0.4 is moderately heritable. We see that with a lot of our performance traits. And a heritability greater than 0.4 is considered highly heritable, and we'll see that with a lot of our carcass traits. Now, so the first thing we're going to look at are those heritabilities. The first table over here is includes both the blood parameters and temperament measures. Along the diagonal of that are our heritability estimates. Above the diagonal are our genetic correlations, and we'll get into that in a little bit. On the other table, that's between our carcass measures and our disease traits. And again, we'll look at the diagonal on that table as well. So heritabilities of our two disease traits, our two blood parameters, both cortisol and ILH, showed to be moderately heritable with estimates of 0.23 and 0.34 respectively. Keep in mind, with all of these heritability estimates, the standard error was between 0.05 and 0.07. And cortisol and ILH heritabilities I did not find previously reported in the literature. Shoot scores, our two estimates for that, for the time of placement was 0.23 and the time of reimplantation was 0.19. Previous literature has quite a range that I found, and ours were at the lower end of that. Now, our exit velocities, those have become more and more reported in terms of heritability. But our estimates were 0.17 and 0.27 for the first and second exit velocity measures. Again, there's quite a range in terms of heritabilities of exit velocity. I think most of these were Boston because influenced breeds, with the exception of the one by Weber and Friesen and then Rolf and others in 2011. So those will be the two that I compare this study to, and ours is still much lower than those heritabilities. And then another thing that we looked at for heritabilities in terms of the temperament was their change in exit velocity and their change in shoot score to see if, look at the heritability of their ability to acclimate, and those both showed to be lowly heritable. Now getting into our disease traits and carcass traits, lung and BRB estimates were 0.06 and 0.12 respectively. These go fairly well with previous literature, showing that both of these traits are lowly heritable. And there's too much to cite for the carcass traits, but these tend to be highly heritable, moderately to highly heritable. Our hot carcass weight and ribeye area estimates are fairly low, a marbling score, and what we would expect yield grade to be fit right in with previous estimates of those as well. Now the genetic correlations, these are the correlations between breeding values of the two traits. To find this, we take the additive genetic covariance divided by the product of the additive genetic standard deviations of the two traits that we're looking at. So the genetic correlations, this is from that first table. The ones with a bold border are the ones that are significantly different from zero. We saw positive genetic correlations between all of our temperament measures, with the exception of shoot score at the time of placement and exit velocity at the time of reimplantation. Now here we have the genetic correlations between our two blood parameters and the temperament measures. The only two that showed to be significantly different from zero was between ILH and our two measures of exit velocity, both of which were negative genetic correlations. Now this table has our different measures of gain on the top, as well as carcass traits and disease traits. Along the left-hand side, you'll see the blood parameters and temperament measures. Again, the only significant genetic correlation we saw here between the blood parameters and measures of gain was between ILA and the total gain within the feedlot. This wasn't largely significant here either. There was a negative genetic correlation between exit velocity 1 and gain 1, so the gain between the time of placement and rate of plantation. However, that flip-flopped by the second gain period, and those temperament measures at the time of reimplantation had a positive genetic correlation with our gain during the second period in the feedlot. Cortisol, where it was significant, had negative genetic correlations with our carcass traits, and ILA had positive genetic correlations with our carcass traits, with the exception of ribeye area. Now looking at the temperament measures with the carcass traits, hot carcass weight had a positive genetic correlation with shoot score at the time of placement, and a negative genetic correlation with exit velocity at the time of reimplantation. However, those other two temperament measures didn't show to be significantly different from zero in terms of their genetic correlation. Marbling score had negative genetic correlations, although not very significant, with both of our temperament measures at the time of reimplantation. Ribeye area across the board had a positive genetic correlation with each of our temperament variables. This suggests that animals that have genetics to be more temperamental will also have genetics to have greater ribeye areas. And then yield grade was the opposite, and all of our temperament measures had a negative genetic correlation with our yield grade. Now looking at the genetic correlations between our blood parameters and our disease traits, cortisol had a strong negative genetic correlation with BRD, so whether they had to be treated or not during the feedlot phase. And IL-8 is a bit hard to understand. IL-8 had a negative genetic correlation with lung score, but a positive genetic correlation with BRD. And then our temperament variables, exit velocity 1 had a positive genetic correlation with lung score post-harvest, and our two measures of temperament at the time of reimplantation had negative genetic correlations with BRD in the feedlot. Now looking at the genetic correlations between our carcass traits and the lung measure and the disease traits, both hot carcass weight and marbling score had significant correlations with ribeye area and yield grade. Hot carcass weight had a positive genetic correlation with each of those variables. Marbling score had a negative genetic correlation with ribeye area, but a positive genetic correlation with yield grade. Hot carcass weight had a positive genetic correlation with BRD incidence in the feedlot, so whether they were treated or not, and a positive genetic correlation was found between yield grade and lung score post-harvest. The last measure that we looked at was repeatability, and this measures the strength of the relationship between the first record and future records of a single trait that can be measured repeatedly on a single animal. To find this, we take the variance of the producing ability divided by the phenotypic variance. We did this only for the two temperament measures. Shoot score showed to have a repeatability of 0.17 plus or minus 0.02. And exit velocity had a much higher repeatability with an estimate of 0.41. Now this has been previously reported in the literature. Flight time was reported to have a repeatability of 0.46, and that's our basis for exit velocity. Shoot score, an estimate that's been previously reported, was 0.43, and that's much higher than our estimate, which was similar to the repeatability of exit velocity. That was previously reported was 0.63, and ours was 0.41. Overall conclusions from the genetic portion of this study was that cattle with genetics to be calmer will be more genetically predisposed to BRD. Cattle with genetics to be more temperamental, however, will have genetics for greater ribeye area, reduced marbling score, and keep in mind that didn't have a large significance, and a reduced yield grade. The measures of temperament and immune function are all lowly to moderately heritable, and exit velocity showed to be more repeatable than shoot score. I'd like to thank Zoetis for their funding in this project and all the collaborators involved, including Colorado State University, University of Illinois, Texas Tech, South Dakota State University, and then those at Kansas State University that have helped me. I didn't have to take part in the data collection, so I'm thankful for those that did. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you all might have.